Right. As we are conducting this meeting virtually, we're going to do roll call differently than we have in the past several meetings. We're going to run through it twice. Once before the meeting, which is what we're doing now, so we know who was able to successfully call in, and once at the top of the meeting for NISPAC members. Additionally, I'll do another roll call for speakers. Right, I'm going to start with the government members. I'll state the name of the agency. The agency member will reply by identifying themselves and stating whether they are the primary or alternate. If the primary is present, once the meeting is live, that means at 10 o'clock, only the primary will state they are present. Once I've gone through the government members, I will then proceed with the industry members. If we don't have agency representation, a member of my staff will attempt to track them down before the meeting to see whether or not they're having trouble calling in. Please keep your phone on mute until I have stated your agency. If you do not have a mute button on your phone, hit *6 on your phone. Thank you for your continued patience during this extraordinarily unusual time. All right, so here we go. ODNI, are you present?
Good morning. Present and primary.
And you're Valerie Kerbin, right? Now remember to introduce yourself.
Yes, right. Valerie Kerbin. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. DOD, are you present?
Yes, DOD is present with from DCSA. You've got Dave Stapleton here.
Okay. DOE, are you present?
Yes. Good morning, Tracy Kendall. I'm the alternate.
All right. Thank you, Tracy. NRC, are you present? All right. Don't hear anybody from NRC. All right. DHS, are you present?
Yes. This is Mike Scott, and I'm the primary.
Okay. Thank you. DCSA, are you present?
Keith Miner, DCSA, primary present.
Hi, Keith. CIA.
Heather Green, DCSA present as well.
Okay. Thank you, Heather. CIA. All right, don't hear anybody. Commerce, are you present? Somebody from Commerce, all right. DOJ, are you present? All right. Nobody from DOJ. NASA, are you present?
Good morning. Ted Jones here, primary.
Thank you. NSA, are you present? All right, nobody from NSA. All right, State Department, are you present?
Yes, Kim Barger, primary.
All right, thank you, Kim. Air Force, are you present? Department of Navy, are you present? Randy Akers, alternate. Thank you, Randy. Department of the Army, are you present? All right, I hear anybody from the Army. All right, staff, we've got some people to track down, it sounds like, from the government side of this. Right, I'm going to now move over. Yeah, okay, thanks, Heather. Now I'm going to do the roll call for the industry members. All right, Heather Sims, are you present? All right, certainly need Heather at some point. All right, Brian Mackey, are you present? Bob Harney, are you present? It's like we're striking out here on the industry side. Dan McGarvey, are you present? Dennis Raga, are you present? Heather, this is Mark. I'm not getting any industry response at all.
Yes, sir. I'll include them on the email. It is concerning, but I did get an email from Heather this morning, so I'll be sending her a text as well as the email. I've got some people's cell that I can text them as well.
I like your sang-froid here as we go through this. All right. Rosie Barrero, are you present? No. Cheryl Stone, are you present? April Abbott. All right, we just went for whatever it was on the industry side. So we obviously
Dennis Arriaga, I'm here.
Oh, hey, Dennis. Okay, good. You're
Good morning.
You're the Lone Ranger this morning, so you may be doing a lot here, man. All right, so anyway, Heather, please see what you can do to track down our industry brethren and sisters here so we can get this meeting underway. All right, I'm going to
do a
roll call.
Government.
Yeah, sure. No. I'm going to do a roll call now for the speakers, and I suspect we're going to have some who are there and some who aren't. Dave Stapleton.
Can you hear me? Yes, Mr. President.
Good. All right. Heather Green.
Present.
Yeah. Okay. Devin Casey.
Present.
Yep. Perry Russell Hunter. All right. Roy Jacino.
Here.
Thank you, Roy. Gary Reed. All right. Keith Minard.
Here.
All right. Booker Bland. Back up for Keith. I don't think we're going to need Booker now that Keith is here. All right. Booker, Donna. Okay, great. Donna McLeod. So another backup. J.J. Robertson, another backup. Serena Hutchison, another backup. And Chuck Tench.
Looks like we're
doing okay, great. Thank you. Looks like we're doing better on the speakers. Right. If anyone is planning on speaking during the MISPAC and has not heard from, please speak now. And obviously that would be the industry side, which we have not heard from. So.
Oh. Hi, this is Heather Sims. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Heather.
Okay, perfect.
Good. Good. You're one of our cleanup hitters. All right, good.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining today's teleconference MISPAC meeting. Please note that all participant lines are muted. I would like to begin today's conference by introducing today's speaker, Mark Bradley, Director of the Information Security Oversight Office, as well as the Chairman of the NISPAC. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Welcome and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is the 64th meeting of the National Industrial Security Policy Advisory Committee, commonly known as the NISPAC. We appreciate your patience as we navigate through these extraordinarily unusual times. This is the first NISPAC meeting that's being conducted virtually. With that being said, we're going to be proceeding a little differently from what we've done in the past. We'll provide a survey after this is done to see how everybody thinks this worked or did not work. We'll provide the link via the ISU overview blog after the conclusion of this meeting if you don't get it directly. So a little housekeeping. We're going to try to go as quickly as we can, realizing, again, we're doing this by phone. So I'm going to try to speak as clearly and as slowly as I can. This thing's being transcribed, so I want to make sure we have an accurate transcript. This is a public meeting. It'll be audio recorded, and about halfway through, we're going to take a five-minute break. Unlike what the registration confirmation states, we're not going to be using WebEx. There were just too many technical challenges for that, so we thought we'd rather spend time discussing the substance of the MISPAC and learning about who can log on and who cannot. So this meeting is going to be done through phone lines only. If you've not already had the agenda and slides, please Google MISPAC reports on committee activities and click the first link that pops up to retrieve them. This link also has a link to the ISU overview blog. And I'm going to start by asking for attendance from the government members. I'll state the name of the agency. The agency member will reply by identifying themselves by name. Once I've gone through the government members, I will then proceed with the industry members. Please keep your phone on mute until I have stated your agency. As a reminder, if you do not have a mute button, please hit *6 on your phone to mute and unmute. All right, I'm going to start with ODNI. Are you present?
This is Valerie Turbin. I'm present.
Thank you, Valerie. DOD, are you present?
This is Jeff Spinninger. I'm here.
Thank you, Jeff. DOE, are you present?
This is Tracy Kendall, present.
Thank you, Tracy. NRC, are you present? All right. DHS, are you present?
This is Michael Scott. I'm present.
Hi, Michael. DCSA, are you present?
Keith Minard, present.
Thank you, Keith. CIA, are you present? All right, Department of Commerce, are you present? Department of Justice, are you present? NASA, are you present?
Kenneth Jones, present.
Thank you, Kenneth. NSA, are you present? Department of State, are you present?
Yeah, Kim Barker, thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Department of Air Force, are you present?
Karen Donlinger is present.
Thank you, Karen. Department of the Navy, are you present?
Randy Akers is present.
Thank you, Randy. Department of the Army. No. Right now I'm going to turn to the industry members. Heather Sims, are you present?
This is Heather Sims, present.
Right. Brian Mackey, are you present?
Yes, Brian Mackey, present.
Thank you, Brian. Bob Harney. Dan McGarvey. Dennis Araga.
Present, sir.
Thank you, Dennis. Rosie Barrera.
Yes, Rosie Barrera, present.
Right. Cheryl Stone. April Abbott. All right, that's the roll call. Greg, how do the numbers? Yeah, sure.
Department of Justice, Kathleen Berry.
Nice, good. DOJ is on. Greg, what's the tally now for the agencies and for the NISPAC, and I'm sorry, the industry members in terms of a quorum?
So we don't have a quorum because we have four industry members present,
right,
and we need five. And on the government side, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, plus you makes 11. So we actually do have a sufficient number on the government side. We're missing one industry. Mr. Chair, Mark, it's possible, I don't know, but Will, you're the person coordinating this, correct, for us?
Yeah, correct.
Is it possible that some of these people have dialed in on the participant line, or the general line, I'm sorry if I'm misstating that.
We do have one that did dial in as an attendee. Do you want us to go ahead and mute his line, sir?
Please.
Well, who is the attendee? Is it one of the members?
Yes, sir. It's NSA.
Also NSA. So okay.
It's for the government side. It doesn't help us on the
end. Yeah, hey, Mark, this is Brad Wesby from NSA.
Hey, Brad.
Hi, this is Heather Sims. We have two more industry members that just came on, Ms. Cheryl Stone and Mr. Bob Harney.
Oh,
okay,
good.
So that takes care of the quorum issue. All right,
sorry, we have the quorum now. Yep.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay, so let's continue. We're expecting this to be the largest audience for this NISPAC meeting in recent history. I think what the moderator said, we had 478 people on the line as of about 10 minutes ago. Now, because of this, we will not be taking questions from the public during the meeting. Only ISU and NISPAC members will be asking questions. We know this is a disappointment for some. However, please feel free to email NISPAC, that's NISPPAC, at nara.gov with your questions. We will be sure to not only answer appropriate questions, but include them in the record of this meeting. Speakers, NISPAC members, and ISU, we request that everyone identifies by themselves before speaking each time for the record. Again, this is being audio recorded, and it makes it a lot easier when we do the transcript to actually have a name to match with the dialogue. I want to remind government membership of the requirement to annually file a financial disclosure form with the National Archives and Records Administration, Office of General Counsel. Before a government member may serve in this PAC, and annually thereafter, this must be done. The same form for financial disclosure used throughout the federal government, OGE Form 450, satisfies reporting requirements. So, again, we're not saddling you with additional requirements. It's the same document. If there are questions, please reach out to NISPAC, again, NISPPAC at NARA.gov. All right. We have several changes to the NISPAC membership. Call to your attention. We welcome Mark Hanoski as the new representative from the Department of Energy. He's replacing Mark Brooks. We are also welcoming Dr. Jennifer Obenier as the new representative from the Navy. She's replacing Dr. Mark Livingston. Randy Akers is the alternate who replaced Glenn Clay. Jennifer Aquinas is serving as the new representative from the Department of Air Force. Sharon Ballinger has been serving as an alternate but will no longer be in that position. Annie Backus will serve as alternate. Kenneth Jones is now serving as the new representative from NASA, while Stephen Payton serves as the alternate. Our time with Bob Harney and Brian Mackey with Industry is coming to an end, with their terms ending September 30th, 2020. Industry, I would like to have the nominations by September 1st, 2020 for their replacements, so we can keep this train on the rails. Thank you all for your contributions over the years. We look forward to continuing the work you have done with new representatives. All right, Greg Pannoni, my deputy, Jamaisu, will address the status of action items in November 20th, 2019 meeting, our last meeting. Greg?
Yes, thank you, Mark, Mr. Chair, Director Isu. Good morning, everyone. So what we'll do is first announce that the NISPAC meeting minutes from the last meeting, which was back in November of 2019, were finalized on February 14th, 2020. They are posted on the ISU website. From that meeting, there were 10 action items. Several of them are related, so that I am going to address them in groups. So let me start. The first one concerns NIDS. Actually, there's four of them that concerns the national interest determinations and that process. So we'll take all four of them together. The first was industry was to provide instances of delayed NIDS processing by the CSAs/CSOs. My understanding for that one is that industry is submitting a Freedom of Information Act request for a listing of foreign ownership, control, or influence entities in the NISP to address that point. The next one from that last meeting was that ISU would convene a NISPAC-NID working group meeting in the near future with industry reps, DCSA, to address the challenges of the NID processes. And we will be planning to do that in the next 60 days. The next one had to do with industry requested that the NID working group, this is really essentially the same thing, working group reconvene to discuss timelines and procedures. So say we'll do that. And the next one was that the chair requested government and industry provide metrics for NID working group, from the NID working group, excuse me. And so that's also wrapped up in this hosting of a working group meeting. We will also have separately a CSA and CSO working group so that the U.S. government can hopefully come together on some of the challenges in the NID process. So that takes care of the four groupings for the national interest determinations. The next action items there from the last meeting, there's two that we're grouping here. And the first is the access to the Defense Information for Security System, also known as DISS, by non-DOD agencies. And we had a similar item, the 10th item from the last meeting, wherein the DCSA would get back to State Department about their difficulties being able to log on to JPASS. My understanding is there has been a workaround that was provided, so we consider this one closed. The next action item, the third, which we're grouping again here, is so this is action item three for this meeting, but it turns out it was action items three and eight from the last meeting, and that was dealing with insider threat. So the action item coming out of the last meeting was the DCSA was in process of internal and formal coordination of an industrial security letter, otherwise known as an ISL, that would replace the current ISL 2016-02. And so that one is in formal review at DCSA, and we expect it to be promulgated very soon. And then the other part of this grouping, also dealing with insider threat, concerned having a insider threat working group meeting. Industry requested the insider threat working group reengage to discuss maturity of the insider threat program. And due to competing priorities, we have not been able to schedule that insider threat working group meeting, but we plan to do so in the next 60 days. The next item concerns the NISPAC bylaws, and we plan to take a vote on this item at today's meeting on the proposed changes. So assuming we get through that, which is coming up next on the agenda, this item will then be considered closed. The next item it concerns industry requesting DCSA reengage with industry on the relationship between the Risk Integration Security Oversight Program, also known as RISO, the Defense in Transition, also known as DIT, and the Tailored Security Plan, also known as TSP, and the Security Rating Score. So this is considered closed because those programs slash items are being reworked by DCSA, but additional information on these items, or at least some of them, will be provided as part of the DCSA update. So that concludes the action items from the last meeting. Do any NISPAC members have any questions or remarks about the action items and their status?
This is Heather Sims. Thank you for the update. No questions.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, Mr. Chair, I'm turning it over to you.
Back to me. All right.
Move forward.
All right. Thank you, Greg, for that summary. Okay, at the last meeting, we discussed changing the NISPAC bylaws. The government membership of the NISPAC, I solicit and accept nominations from the agency heads. I am proposing to modify the bylaws to allow nominations from either the agency head or the senior agency official for the NISP. We've also made some clarifications and administrative changes in the bylaws. We sent the revised bylaws to the members ahead of time. Before we vote, does anyone have any questions or any concerns before we actually vote? All right. Hearing none. Go ahead. Excuse me. Am I hearing something or not? I can't tell. Okay, good, okay. I'm requesting that we have a formal vote now to change it. We need two-thirds of the present government members and two-thirds of present industry members need to approve the proposed bylaws in order for them to be amended. Right, so I'm going to vote like this. I'll say the name of the agency, and then please respond with your name and yes or no to the proposed bylaws. Then I'll ask industry members to vote in the same manner. Right, I'll start with ODNI. Valerie?
Yes, for OD&I.
All right, that's Valerie Kirvin. All right. DOD?
This is Jeff, yes.
All right, Jeff Spender, yes. All right. DOE?
Yes, Tracy Kendall.
Tracy. NRC? I'm not the only one from NRC. DHS?
Mike Scott.
Is that a yes?
Yes, for DHS. This is Mike.
All right. Thank you. ECSA?
Keith Miners, yes.
Thank you, Keith. CIA, do we have anybody? Commerce, another one. DOJ?
Yes, Christine.
Yes, Kathleen Berry.
I'm right, sorry, I'm yielding to Christine Gunning.
All right. So that was a yes from DOJ?
Yes.
All right, thank you. NASA?
Lieutenant Jones, yes.
All right. NSA?
Yes, from Brad Weatherby at NSA.
Right. Thank you, Brad. Department of State?
Kim Bogger, yes.
All right, thank you, Kim. Department of Air Force?
Here, yes.
Right. Department of Navy? Randy Akers, yes. Thank you. Department of the Army?
James Anderson, yes.
All right. I, as a chair, vote yes myself. All right. Thank you. Now I'll address the industry members. Please state whether you are voting yes or no to change the bylaws. Heather Sims?
Heather Sims, industry, yes.
All right. Brian Mackey?
Brian Mackey, yes.
All right. Bob Harney? Dan McGarvey?
Dan McGarvey, yes.
All right. Dennis Arriaga?
Dennis Arriaga, yes.
Thank you. Rosie Barrero?
Rosie Barrero, yes.
All right. Cheryl Stone?
Cheryl Stone, yes.
All right. April Abbott? All right. Greg, it looks like the motion is carried. Am I correct about that?
Yes, sir. We have all yeses of everyone that's present. Absent was NRC, CIA, Commerce, and on the industry side, we had two members not present. So the
I'd like to step in. This is Dennis Brady, NRC.
Oh, okay. Dennis,
yeah.
Mr. Chair, you want to ask him how he votes?
Line. So I
yeah,
was
Dennis,
present for roll call. I didn't know I wasn't recognized.
Okay.
All right, well, Dennis, on the bylaws, do you vote yes or no?
I vote yes.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
This is Felicia. I wasn't recognized. I am on the line, and I vote yes.
All right, thank you, Felicia.
Felicia, I'm sorry. Which agency are you with?
CIA.
I'm sorry. Okay, thank you.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Got it. Yep. Good.
So now we have 15 yes on the government side, with one not present being Commerce.
Right.
And so looks like the motion is carried.
Right, the motion is carried. All right. We will amend our bylaws accordingly. Right? Thank you. Well, I appreciate your work on that and your close attention to reading it and making your cogent comments. All right, this time we're now going to introduce our speakers for updates. Valerie, is Gary around?
Yes, I'm sorry. This has moved a little faster than we expected, so we're following up for Mr. Reed to call in just a moment. If you can give us
all right. Hi, this is Jeff. Mr. Reed is on, so we're just working through any mechanics to get him live.
Okay. All right. Just let us know when he's on, and then I'll be glad to introduce Gary.
Okay, I think I got unmuted. Can anyone hear me?
Yeah, Gary, this is Mark. All right, let me introduce you, then I'm going to turn the mic over to you, okay?
Okay.
Right, I'm privileged to introduce Gary Reed, Director for Defense Intelligence and Security, Counterintelligence, Law Enforcement, and Security, who will give the update on behalf of DOD as the NIST Executive Agent. All right, Gary, it's all yours.
Thank you very much, Mark, and good morning, everybody. I'll be brief, trying to talk to 500 people at one time. Just a couple high-level thoughts from the Pentagon here on behalf of the Secretary of Defense and the Undersecretary. A lot of movement in the space around the security portfolio across all aspects, not just limited to the NISP, but everything we do here ultimately affects all of you in one way or another. If you saw Secretary Esper's HASC hearing last week, he indicated his views on leaks and unauthorized disclosures and OPSEC in general. So I just want to share with you briefly that you are going to soon learn more about an effort we're going to put underway at his direction to really make a dent in the defense enterprise and our views and our behaviors relative to operation security and protection of sensitive information and prevention of unauthorized disclosures. A lot of the effort we're putting into this will come in protecting pre-decisional information, not necessarily national security information. You know, we don't need to change the rules for national security information. We just need to enforce when there's violations. And you see a lot of that. You see that in the paper. You see federal cases coming to closure. But below that level is where the real nuisance problem is, and that is leaks of pre-decisional information. We are going to move forward with putting OPSEC CUI into effect very soon for DOD, and that will start a process of changing how we handle that information, and that will flow across the department. That's a major undertaking. As this group knows, we've been talking about CUI for a while. This will probably be the largest effort on scale to start imposing CUI markings and controls, and it will be on the OPSEC category. We are still obviously working with DCSA on CUI on the sensitive, I forgot the term, technology information, critical technology. That we'll talk more about that in a second. But I just wanted to tease that out for you. You're going to hear and see a lot on that, and we would invite everyone's cooperation and collaboration on getting this. You know, DOD is a lot of things, but I don't think we're notorious for being really good at controlling information. We're such a large organization. This is going to start here with leadership. It's going to emanate out of the Pentagon. It's going to resonate very quickly into major command headquarters, but ultimately trickle down to every member of the department. You'll see training materials on DCSA's website. You'll see personal message from the SecDef. He's very involved in this. So I just want to share that with you. The second thing I want to lead in, off with is on DCSA, and it was just mentioned earlier, things like SRS and tailored security plans. So here's what you already know. We have a new leadership team at DCSA and a new cadre of leaders coming on board. And with change of leaders comes refresh and reset. At a time when we are still absorbing, internalizing, and operationalizing the transition from DSS and NBIB into DCSA. And that includes major changes on the technology protection, industrial security side of the ledger, not just on the background investigation. So I would ask everyone's patience as we go through this leadership reset. Director Lietzau made some really powerful decisions on bringing on a team that can join those that are already there and accelerate efforts that affect this group the most on the Tech Protect side. And you're going to hear from them later in the conference or in the call, so I won't go into that anymore. Only just to say that obviously we've got to do some resetting. DCSA is doing a fantastic job of keeping missions going on both sides, again, the background investigation side, industrial security side, but we have a long way to go as a department, and they have as an agency to say what I would call a normalized posture as this new defense agency. So we got to do the day-to-day missions. We got to protect the things we have to protect. We have to support the things we have to support. But we also have a vision and a strategy for reaching a higher level of integration across the agency, and that is what they're working on and that Mr. Kernan has put in motion. So a lot of movement there. The last point I want to make just relative to the NISPOM, again, just share with you, we are still plugging away. Jeff Spenninger is leading to get our NISPOM change proposal out of legal and into OMB to get into the rulemaking process. We have a hard deadline, as many know, at the end of July. We're just days, hopefully soon to be hours away from getting this out of legal. It's a quite complicated document. A lot of changes, the most substantive change will be in the area of C3 and the reporting requirements. Now, C3 has been on the street for quite some time. We're still working across the rest of the department to get the procedures in place, and getting this written into the NISPOM is an important step towards extending that out to industry. So again, the dialogue is important. The collaboration that we enjoy with this group is very important to our success. I just want to thank everybody for your patience under this crazy times that we're in. And we'll keep plugging away and look forward to achieving some of these near-term goals and setting these long-term benchmarks for things like how does the DCSA in the future in a more integrated way and those kind of topics. How do we get to the visions that, frankly, Stan Sims and Dan Payne put in motion about tailoring and focusing NISP on not so much a repetitive process, but a threat-based process. How do we actually get to that? As everyone knows, we've been doing this for a minute. We've thrown some spaghetti on the wall here in the last couple years, and we're still, in my own view, are looking for the right formulation of how to get the most out of the resources that we have, how to be the most effective during this time where our technologies are under continuous attack from foreign intelligence entities. Nobody's satisfied, frankly, with the level of protection we have across the board. Everyone's interested in how to do it better, and it's going to come out of this group and others to come up with the best idea to do the most with the least amount of resources and cover the most ground in the most critical areas. So that work has come very far. But it'd be wrong for me to say that we're near completion. And some of this is things that are never actually complete. It's a constant state of improvement and refinement. But you can't operate like that in the dark every day. You have to have a set of rules. You have to have a set of procedures that everyone understands. That's the day-to-day part that we move along as we work towards the longer strategic objective. So thanks for everyone pulling this together. And look forward to hearing the discussions and continued collaboration. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Gary. Does anybody have any questions for Gary? All right. Thank you again, Gary. That was an excellent summary. All right. I'm now pleased to introduce Dave Stapleton, Assistant Director of Critical Technology Protection for the Defense Counterintelligence and Security Agency. And after Dave has spoken, we'll hear from other members of the DCSA staff. All right, Dave, take it away.
Good morning. It's an honor to be here, having joined DCSA just this past month. And I would just say that as Assistant Director, we look forward to upcoming engagements with cleared industry and government partners. Mr. Lietzau, who joined DCSA as our director starting in March of this past year, replacing Mr. Fallon, apologizes for not being able to attend this meeting, but he will be planning on attending the NISPAC in the fall. On his behalf, I'd like to pass on that we would like to thank our industry and government partners for working with DCSA as we continue the NISP mission while under the constraints of COVID-19. We're working on our reconstitution plan. While we do not know when we will be back to business as usual, we will keep industry informed as we make changes. Let me conclude by stating that we are on the front lines of economic competition against near-peer and peer adversaries, and our partnership with industry comprises the tip of our economic spear. We look forward to working together with industry to protect our security of our nation and the free world We greatly appreciate your support. Thank you all.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions for Dave? All right, thank you. Next, we have Heather Sims, the NISPAC industry spokesperson, who will provide the industry update.
Mark, this is Keith. I was going to follow up the DCSA updates.
Oh, I'm sorry, Keith. You know what? If I could read my talking points in front of me, I'd be dangerous. I'm most sorry about that. Yes, please, Keith, go.
That's okay. I appreciate the time. Good morning, Keith Miner, DCSA. First, I would like to provide an update on our operations under COVID-19 because I think this is a key and critical update to show the work that's been going on during this very challenging time. As you all know, COVID-19 has impacted the entire NIST community. In order to address these impacts, DCSA has implemented a wide range of initiatives to ensure we continue our engagement with industry and our government partners to continue our oversight and support to the NIST. Some of these changes include moving to continuous monitoring process for conducting assessments instead of on-site visits. We are continuing to process SBLs. We are still holding FOCI initial and annual meetings in virtual formats. We have modified our processes for approval of safeguarding, and we are continuing to process new and existing ATOs that we are deferring the on-site assessments. I do need to mention the staff from OESDINS and ISU who are invaluable in assisting on a wide range of issues at the Department of National level, which have included DSA overnight express carriers and guidance that came out from Underwriters Laboratories regarding monitoring station changes due to COVID-19. Great value in the team effort on this to get the right information out to industry and continue to put that information together so we can keep industry moving forward in their NIST programs. While we still have challenges due to COVID-19, engaging with industry and our government partners has enabled DCSA to continue support to the NIST while working to minimize impacts. So since March, we've actually had weekly calls between DCSA and the NISPAC industry spokesperson to address key issues and impacts and to rapidly work to identify resolutions. This was really enabled us to address and work quickly to provide updates and enable guidance on these critical issues to keep industry moving. I will note that the slides on the website include more information on DCSA ATOs on stats and timelines. There'll be no specific briefing in this today on this pack from our ATO side. I believe Mr. Reed mentioned Security Executive Agent Directive 3, which is the reporting guidance. Late last fall, industry had an opportunity to review the ISL, which will be a companion document to the NIST Palm Revision as it comes out. And what I'd like to note on that is we are currently planning communications, guidance, and resources to aid in its implementation as we did for insider threat in 2016. We see that C3 requires the same level of effort as a community to make sure we're successful in those requirements. So while we're waiting on the NIST Palm Revision to be issued that will also incorporate the ISL, we do need to begin planning for these requirements. Our internal staff planning is ongoing. We'll be working to schedule engagements with industry through NISPAC to begin planning for these requirements because we see a need for tools, training, and resources to support its implementation. So we know that we'll be scheduling here in the near term to schedule with industry to start that engagement strategy. So the next thing I think is one of the bigger things we'll talk about today is the Defense Information System for Security ISL. We appreciate the comments and the coordination effort that OUSDINS did with the NISPAC on coordinating the DIS ISL. The replacement for JPASS as a system of record for personal security. So what I would like to note today, and we've already informed the NISPAC spokesperson, that we have made administrative updates to the ISL 2011-04 adverse information. The administrative changes addresses the use of DIS for the submission of incident reports and adverse information. And we'll be working to post the updated ISL and notice to the DCSA website by the end of the week. This effort's been in coordination with staff elements of DCSA, OUSDINS, CLS, and DMDC. So some key points on this. To ensure you'll be able to submit incident reports, contractors who have not obtained their DIS accounts should do so as soon as possible. The transition to DIS for incident reporting will occur on August 15, 2020, and the ISL does include links on access information, email for the DIS support team, and links to training on adverse information reporting to better enable industry in this transition. We'll make sure that the staff that manages the DIS side of the house from DCSA is engaged on this and make sure that any issues or challenges are addressed along the way till we hit the August 15th mark for transition. The next update is on FCL timelines. The entity vetting components of DCSA, which includes now the former facility clearance branch and foci branch, has seen timelines dropping since their merger as a single division that handles end-to-end processing at FCL and foci, now called entity vetting. Based on the organization change, our focus strategy, we are seeing some reductions in timelines, and we'll ensure we keep industry updated on improvements. We will also see efficiencies in processing as we bring additional staff on board in the next few months. So I know that in the action items, and Mr. Reed mentioned this, is that there are some changes in DCSA, and we are looking at our prior efforts. An example of the prior efforts that we're looking at is the standard practice and procedure process that's been recently engaged with industry on through the NISPAC post spokesperson, and there's been some discussion on this. And we are taking a strategic pause in some of these efforts as we move forward to ensure we keep industry members of the NISPAC engaged on our initiatives and also as we move forward to re-engage on some of these strategies. So the last couple of items I have are actually on systems updates. I know that NIS usually is something that comes up because of latency and other issues, but I would like to say that for the National Industrial Security System, NIS, this month DCSA is assessing output from the new application monitoring tool. And we'll be applying improvements to the NIST application infrastructure to improve system performance. So what we'll need is feedback on how that goes along the way over the next month or so to make sure that we can validate that the changes we're making actually do the things we need them to do. The last note I really have is on the NIST contract classification security system is the federal acquisition rule has been issued on the use of NCCS for the development 254, the contract security classification specification. It'll have an effective date of August 3rd, 2020. The rule addresses use of NCCS by DOD and non-DOD Federal Reserve Branch signatories for industrial security services. I would ask everybody to go look at the rule, and then if you have any questions, please contact DCSA. The FAR changes apply to solicitations issued on or after the effective date of change. Contracting officers may actually use the rule retroactively, but as far as DCSA's view on this, it's used on a way forward for new 254s. Now that the rule has been issued, DCSA will begin an increased engagement strategy for deployment, working primarily through the NISPAC NIST Systems Working Group, which was just recently established, and we'll have more to follow on that. So DCSA staff will provide additional updates on personal security clearance vetting during the working part of the agenda. While not currently in the office, DCSA is here to support you today as we were prior to COVID-19. Thank you.
Anybody have any questions for Keith?
Yes, this is Greg Pannoni, ISU. First of all, thank you very much, Keith, for that comprehensive update and the, you know, the note of ISU support and others. A little bit more on this transition to DISS on the date. I heard you say August 15th. Is that a hard date that JPASS is cut off on that date, or is because I thought JPASS would not be cut off until the end of the calendar year. We talked a little bit about it during their clearance working group. So just if you could give us a clarification on that point, please.
So as I mentioned, this is for incident reports and adverse information reporting. That's it's transition of a module.
I see. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Right. Okay, any other questions for Keith? Keith, is that the end of the DCSA update before I? Okay, great. Thank you. Right, next, we have Heather Sims, the NISPAC industry spokesperson who provide the industry update. Heather?
Good morning. This is Heather Sims. It's a pleasure to be able to provide the National Industrial Security Program policy impacts from an industry perspective today. To say the least, it's been a busy and very unpredictable year thus far. What hasn't changed, industry's active involvement monitoring all the moving parts of the NIST that may have an impact on the industrial base. Today, I'll provide just a few topics being monitored, tracked, and worked by the industry NISPAC members and many of the industry associations. Industry has encountered an enormous amount of change these past few years, and we are noticing this is increasing at a much faster pace than anticipated. Understandably, due to the increased threats towards U.S. interests, it's more important now than ever that industry and the United States government gain fidelity on the cost of the NISC implementation before any additional reforms and policies are considered and implemented. I will also, now is the time for industry to be united in our efforts in addressing our collective concerns for the benefit of the entire cleared industrial base. Together we are stronger. I ask that the NISTEC industry members are utilized to the extent possible to address industry's NIST concerns with the United States government. New legislation, development of policy, and the variances in which federal agencies interpret and implement has caused a strain to industry that could impact our ability to provide the needed services and products to assist the United States government in maintaining its competitive edge over our adversaries. Industry is continuously tracking new legislation and policy changes that will have an overarching impact on industry's operations. Some are minor and have been anticipated, while others will have a major impact on our way of doing business. On the surface, one section of a legislation may not cause concern. However, when combined in the collective with all the other new policies, it may have an administrative and resource strain on the industrial base. Industry must closely follow legislation and policy from development to implementation. As often seen, a well-intended policy is only as good as it is implemented at the lowest level. In many cases, the way an agency or department interprets a new policy sometimes has an even greater effect on industry, often adding unnecessary administrative burdens when not accompanied by a strategic vision or communication. Through the NISPAC, we can better shed light on industry's challenges in a collaborative environment proactively. While I don't have time in this forum to address all of industry's interests and concerns with legislative impact, I will speak to a few key sections of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2019 that has our interest. Section 889 prohibits the federal government from procuring or obtaining or extending or renewing a contract to procure or obtain any equipment, system, or service that uses covered telecommunications equipment or services as a substantial or essential component of any system or as critical technology of any system. This prohibition takes effect August 13, 2020. Considering the impacts of COVID-19, industry associations have recommended language to extend Section 889 implementation. While we understand the need to combat the national security and intellectual property threats that face the United States, there is still a lot of unknown implications to this rule. More collaborations with the United States government is required to ensure no disruption to services or products provided and to better understand how federal agencies intend to implement the processes they will put in place for cleared industry to ensure compliance. Industry is confident that NIST supply chain topics will be the focus for the foreseeable future. Industry recommends the creation of a NISPAC supply chain working group so discussions like the impacts to the proposed or approved legislation can be addressed, and as a team, we can find viable solutions to our shared concerns about the risk to the supply chains. National interest determinations, NIDs, timelines, and processes are still a perceived concern for companies under foreign ownership control or influence that have a requirement for a NID. Delays in the process affect the ability of contractors to meet contractual obligations. NDAA Section 842 eliminates the NID requirement for covered national technology industrial-based companies beginning October 1, 2020. Industry is looking to the United States government for additional clarity and guidance to all contracting activities. It is recommended at the next scheduled NID-NISPAC working group to discuss the current NID process, identify gaps, and work to find efficiencies in the process to limit processing timelines. Currently, NISPAC industry does not have a full listing of companies under a NID obligation to better understand the full impact of the issue from an industry perspective. Industry is working on a Freedom of Information Act request to obtain the information so that discussions can be started with affected companies to better understand the impacts and areas of concern. Industry continues to work with the United States government on the overall process to improve timelines on NIT approvals. While industry has expressed concerns about the United States government's ability to share threat, adverse, and insider threat information for decades, there's still work to be done. Section 9403 of the NDAA, Federal Policy on Sharing of Information Pertaining to Contractor Employees in the Trusted Workforce, is the first step to improving that gap. Until industry is treated as an equal partner in the full spectrum of information sharing, we are limited on our visibility of the potential threats. Information sharing policies should take into consideration protection for cleared industries to share relevant threat information between cleared companies and the United States government without the fear of reprisal. There are many other sections of the NDA that affect industry's involvement in the NIST. These will be tracked and industry impacts collected through the NISPAC Policy Working Group for discussion with our government partners. In the future, it is beneficial for industry and the United States government alike to understand and acknowledge impacts to operations early in the process and to partner to find amenable solutions. Industry has and wishes to continue to be an active partner on working groups to provide expertise early in the planning process for all aspects of the NIST. With that said, industry would like to acknowledge their appreciation to many government partners over this past year. ODNI, OPM, and PAC-PMO have increased their collaboration with industry NISPAC members on vital personnel security reform. We look forward to continued discussion as government develops and implements this reform. Additionally, DOD and DCSA were quick to act and increase their collaboration with industry on the onset of COVID-19 to better understand the impact to industry, albeit collaboration had already increased prior to COVID-19. It was appreciated the level of involvement and effort by DOD to get industry guidance on several operational impacts. Industry encouraged this type of collaboration at all levels on a continuous basis and not just during a crisis. Industry is closely monitoring the impacts of new legislation and policy, but we're also still focused on many of the CSA agencies' efforts to provide oversight of the industrial base. At the November 2019 NISPAC meeting, I spoke about the 2020 industry's key efforts we were focused on. At that time, it was the DOD Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, Risk Management, Insider Threat, and Personnel Security Reform. While CMMC is about to be implemented through the DOD's cleared contractor base, industry still has concerns about the level of the efforts, duplication of oversight, and how the rollout will impact industry over the next few years. As noted previously, ODNI, OPM, and PAC-PMO have been working with industry and personal security reform. While there are still some implementation unknowns, the transparent discussions through the process are appreciated. The NISPAC Industry Threat Working Group met after the last NISPAC meeting and is working on updating job aids in anticipation of an updated industrial security letter. Industry is still closely monitoring DOD's efforts to move the NIST from a compliance-based program to a more risk-based process. While industry understands the reasoning, there have been processes developed over the last 2 years and tested in certain segments of industry, resulting in an administrative and financial burden for companies without an associated policy or contractual obligation. While the process appears to be on hold for the moment, industry is still concerned about new processes for tailored security plans being developed under the name Standard Security Practices, SPP, development of the security rating score, and other oversight procedures with little industry engagement at the NISPAC level. A strategic vision and communication strategy of efforts would be beneficial to industry and the government customers that DCSA provides oversight and support of. As DOD has the predominance of the cleared companies in the NISP, industry still would be interested in being engaged early with all CSAs as new oversight procedures are developed. There's always a continued need to improve strategic communication of efforts, transparency of processes, consistency across the nation, and understanding industry's inputs. Together, we can develop solutions to better protect the nation's critical information. One notable area that industry has been exerting an enormous amount of resources is managing all the government systems being developed and utilized to manage the NISP. Many systems have come online and or are under development at the same time. While looking at one system, it might not seem to be of concern, but when coupled with the lack of strategic planning or communication issues, these are amplified when promulgated to industry. There is also system latency and data integrity issues affecting the industry. Without the full understanding of the impact for any new system, process, or procedure, the role of the facility security officer or any NIST security professional can quickly become riddled with administrative burdens that move them away from actually performing security functions and moving them to a more risk-based approach. Industry looks forward to assisting our government partners in understanding our challenges so that collectively we can work on viable solutions that industry at large can meet the NIST regulatory requirements, ensure companies' viability in the U.S. and global markets, and maintain a viable secure supply chain so that we can get a balanced approach to protecting our national security. One administrative note before I end. Industry NISPAC has started the process on a nomination selection for two new industry NISPAC members and will have the proposed member nominations to the chair no later than September 1st, 2020. Thank you for your time and allow me to provide updates today. I look forward to our next meeting, hopefully in person. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Anyone have any questions for Heather? Right. Hearing none, I'll turn to Valerie Kerbin, OD&I, who will provide the OD&I updates. Valerie, the floor is yours.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to brief at this virtual NISPAC meeting. I wanted to begin with some updates to where we are with the response to COVID. Of course, with the stay-at-home requirement, D&I had some very limited staff in the office. However, we were closely monitoring and had key staff in the office monitoring the government-wide databases of scattered castles and continuous evaluation. On the policy side, some important things, which I'll discuss this morning, have moved forward and some things have been signed. And also we were working on legislation as well and responding to CDAs. And we did have discussions, engaged discussions with our director of the National Counterintelligence Security Center, Mr. Bill Evanina, to evaluate the process and look to streamlining for NIDS, as we've all discussed prior, and also with what was discussed earlier by Heather and Greg. So one important thing to note is the Director of National Counterintelligence and Security Center was confirmed by the Senate in May, and Mr. Evanina continues to be deeply committed to the NISP program and our partnership with industry and committed to the trusted workforce efforts. Okay, to begin, one of the important policies that did come out and was signed on May 18th, the Security Executive Agent Directive 8, temporary eligibility, was signed on May 18th by Director, Acting Director at the time, Grinnell. This establishes the requirements for authorizing temporary access to classified information, temporary access to a higher level of classified information, a one-time access, and also temporary eligibility to hold a sensitive position or to hold a higher level of sensitive position. When the interests are determined to be in the national security interest prior to the completion of a required background investigation. So this policy was distributed to our departments and agency heads and also to the POCs in our Security Executive Agent Policy Advisory Committee. So hopefully by now you all have seen it. We will ask that ISU send it out to our NISPAC members if they have not seen it yet. However, it is posted on our ncsc.gov website. Additionally, a congressional notification was drafted for our oversight committees. And as of tomorrow, there will be additional questions addressed at the Background Investigation Stakeholders Committee hosted by DCSA. The next policy update is Security Executive Agent Directive 2. As you know, this was signed 2014. It's for the use of polygraph in support of personnel security determinations for initial or continued eligibility for access. Since this was issued, there have been a lot of other policy updates. In addition, the National Center for Credibility Assessment, NACA, is going to transfer from the Defense Intelligence Agency to the Defense Counterintelligence and Security Agency. So due to the impending transfer, it was important to update C2 to reflect the prior, to reflect the new authorities, and also to explain that there will be a co-chair of an advisory board with the SECIA and OUSDI. This went through some formal agency concurrence, and we just received clearance from OMB for it to come back to the DNI, and it will go through our internal review and hopefully be issued very soon. Now, to talk about Trusted Workforce 2.0, the Executive Steering Group, the ESG, as I've mentioned in prior meetings, made up of senior leaders from ODNI, OPM, OMB, DOD, DHS, FBI, and the IC, they were meeting monthly, and also during COVID, they continued to meet virtually and continue the momentum to move things forward. The executive agent staff, along with our partners at PAC-PMO, meet regularly to work on the policy construct for the next set of documents in the policy framework. Also, as mentioned before, there were three top-level documents to implement and give direction to the executive agents and agency heads. One of the documents that did come through is the executive correspondence. It was jointly signed on February 3rd, and this was transforming the federal personnel vetting, measures to expedite reform and further reduce the federal government's background investigation inventory. This EC announced a new approach framework for federal personnel vetting to ensure the entire federal workforce is trusted to protect people, property, information, and mission. In addition, this EC directs additional measures to continue to improve effectiveness and efficiency and reminds agencies of the continuing applicability of previous guidance. It also included clarifications and revisions to the existing federal investigative standards and gave the investigative service providers authorization to use a broader spectrum of investigative methods, which actually is very pertinent now during COVID. One other important aspect of this EC to drive early adoption for compliance with periodic reinvestigations through a continuous vetting program. So a lot of this information was also captured in fact sheets summarizing the EC contents. And these fact sheets were distributed to the departments and agencies, as well as a public version. Additionally, a congressional notification was sent to our oversight committees. And we'll, again, ensure that our NISPAC industry members have been informed of the information and given a copy of this EC. Just a few other next steps and additional collaborations that have taken place. The core vetting doctrine was also pushed through for informal agency review, and the executive agents, PAC-PMO, convened two virtual tabletops with our agency policy SMEs in late March. Also in late March, the executive agents coordinated hosting a virtual meeting with ISU and our NISPAC members, providing an overview and intent of the document, very good conversation and feedback was exchanged and incorporated some of those edits into our final version. The core vetting doctrine was approved by the executive agents to go to OMB, OIRA, on June 22nd for formal interagency review. Comments were due back to us on July 2nd. I know we have received a few comments, and we're going to be adjudicating those shortly. Additionally, the EAs and the PAC PMO hosted another quarterly meeting on June 30th with our ISU and NISPAC members to further discuss the core vetting doctrine and also provided updates and addressed any other questions and concerns. We do promise to continue our dialogue with our partners from industry as we move forward with more modernization of the federal workforce vetting process. So thank you very much for the opportunity to brief you here today.
Thank you, Valerie, for your excellent summary and overview. Any questions for Valerie? All right, hearing none. Up next is Devin Casey from my staff. We provide an update on the Controlled Unclassified Information Program, also known as CUI. Devin?
Good morning. As mentioned, I'm Devin Casey, and I'll be providing an update on the Controlled Unclassified Information Program. Thank you for your introduction. First, we'll start with agency implementation progress. CUI Notice 2020-1 and agency reporting. CUI has a section in the annual report where we reported on the progress of agencies implementing the CUI program. As mentioned during our last presentation, this is the year where we expect to see most agencies' CUI policies published and finalized, which is really the first domino to fall at agencies for implementing their CUI programs. The rest of the dominoes of training, physical security, marking, and the other elements of the program fall rather quickly after that. We did put out CUI Notice 2020-1, which describes the deadlines for implementation in order to help agencies as they were finalizing their implementation plans and steps to implementing the CUI program. So there's a bit more of a coordinated approach and preparedness to meet the deadlines and requirements of the CUI program across the executive branch, as the transition period for agencies and industry and all of our other stakeholders is one of the areas that is a bit more difficult under the CUI program. So the establishment of deadlines helps to bring the different agencies in line with their planning efforts to implement the CUI program. We did request agencies report on the status of their program again this year. It's published to our CUI website and our request for their annual reporting on the status of their CUI program. And reports are due to our office on November 1st. We are allowing a 60-day extension due to the COVID issues that can cause, you know, delays in gathering information at an agency. Our office has been providing a lot of updates and information. One of the most attended updates that we've been doing is our CUI marking class led by Charlene. It's a WebEx class. Anyone can attend the class to learn more about CUI and CUI markings. It is not required, and it does not replace any agency-specific training, but it may be helpful for many people who would like to know more about CUI and how it can be marked under the CUI program. And the training is based off of the 32 CFR 2002. The next class that you can sign up for or attend through our CUI blog is on July 23rd. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Again, you can find out about that on our CUI blog. We've also published some CUI notices. 2020-03 is a non-disclosure agreement template. This was in response to a lot of agencies either asking to update existing non-disclosure agreements that they had or to begin using non-disclosure agreements to protect or identify the responsibilities to protect CUI. So we did provide a template for agencies to use. The intent after getting a little bit more data about how these templates are used and from agencies that begin using it is to work towards a standard form. We also released COI Notice 2020-02, marketing alternative notice that specifically looks to address how alternative markings can apply and when they apply, as well as a notice on the usage of NIST 800-171A, which is the assessment criteria for NIST SP 800-171. It outlined that in NIST SP 800-171, the formal way for assessing the effectiveness of the controls implemented in 171 are documented in NIST SP 800-171A. We also have a current ongoing effort where we're looking to address the potential for insider threat in the CUI environment. We've worked with the National Insider Threat Task Force as well as OMB on efforts to provide CUI understanding and to the insider threat environment, as well as receiving an insider threat understanding in the CUI environment. There definitely seems to be a significant amount of insider threat potential in the CUI environment. We want to make sure that we're adequately preparing agencies with the information they need to address that threat and address that risk as they implement their CUI programs. We also have a CUI metadata standard. It's a standard, not the standard. Big note here is CUI does not have a baked-in requirement for metadata tagging or marking. It is an optional practices that agencies can use to support their CUI programs, whether it's supported automated access controls or supporting machine marking or automated marking of information. Metadata marking is allowable. We worked with the National Information Exchange Model, or NIEM, to create a standard as well as a domain in the new NIEM architecture, which will allow for either a single point of translation or a good reference for anyone who is setting up metadata marking schema to pull from one that has already been created and vetted by our office. That is currently out for comment. You can find out more about how to comment on our CUI blog, but it is out for comment. It is NIEM Revision 5.0 Beta 1. There's a blog post that points you to the NIEM website for how to provide comments to that. Again, it is not a requirement that CUI be metadata marked, but if you are going to mark it, we recommend either using that schema or adapting from that schema to ensure the best compatibility with other entities. And comments are due by July 17th. NIEM has mentioned that they will accept comments after that close date as long as you follow the commenting process outlined on their website. We will also be having a CUI stakeholder update. We did have a ad hoc one on Monday talking about the NIEM metadata marking. So we'll be having our regular quarterly update on July 13th. Two more quick notes. NIST 800-172, which is additional controls, there are enhanced security requirements for protecting controlled unclassified information. A supplement to 171, formerly known as NIST 800-171B, is out for public comment on the NIST website. You can get there by Googling the NIST website or by going to our blog where we link directly to it. Comments are due by August 21st, and there's a discussion of the purpose and intent behind NIST 800-172. Finally, GSA has And the unified agenda of regulatory and deregulatory actions has been updated for the spring 2020 estimations. The CUI FAR case is still on the unified agenda, and the projected comment period, and again, this is an estimated and projected comment period, is from October 2020 to December 2020. You can find more about that on our CUI blog as well. You've probably heard me mention the CUI blog a lot of times so far. We do put a lot of our information on the CUI blog or our CUI website. You can get to both from either. So to stay updated on the CUI program, please feel free to reach out to us through either our email address on the website or through comments on the blog. and we're happy to answer questions. And again, we will have a regularly scheduled quarterly update to stakeholders that has a significant period for question and answer. Unless there are any questions on the CUI program?
Devin, this is Greg Pannone, ISU. Thank you for that comprehensive update as well. I believe you said July 13th for the CUI stakeholder update. Did you mean August 13th?
Oh, sorry, I have two dates here. July 13th, I did, correct. I did, yes.
So do we have the date for the next one?
Yes, it is on the blog.
We can always email it out if you don't have it ready or disposal.
I don't have it. Okay. There's a full post of it on our blog, and we can email it as well if needed. I copied over the wrong date.
Okay. We'll get that out. Yeah.
I copied over our date for our ad hoc meeting.
Not a problem. Okay. Any questions for Devin? And if hearing none, we're going to take a five-minute break now. Please be ready to resume promptly so that we can remain on schedule. I think we're actually get ahead, which is good. Will from Event Services will then mute the bridge so that only those on the speaker line can speak and hear until we resume the call. He will then unmute the bridge after the break. So my watch is showing exactly 11:15, so we will resume promptly at 11:20. Okay, thank you. Okay, welcome back, everybody, to the last bit of our NISPAC meeting here. One quick announcement. Devin was kind enough to track down the CUI stakeholders meeting. It'll be on August 19th. Again, that is August 19th. All right, I'm going to now turn to Greg Pannone, my deputy, who will provide us with an update on the NISPAC clearance working group. Greg?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you've heard, all of you, already, we've heard from two of the CSAs on a number of the high-level points that we discussed during our clearance working group meeting, which was held on July the 2nd, 2020. We are going to meet on a number of things moving forward that have come out of that meeting. I'll just cover some of the things that we didn't discuss already that occurred at the working group meeting. One item is cost collection data. So you may be aware, if you reviewed the ISU annual report that recently came out to the president, that we ISU are undertaking a holistic view of the data, the various data that we collect, why we collect it, how we use it. We report to the president, of course, and the data is, we believe, should be tethered to requirements in the executive order and more than one executive order, the one for the classified program, the NISP, and the directives that emerge from those executive orders. So we've been looking at this at least for over a year now. We're trying to streamline it. We're trying to make it more efficient, easier to collect, methodologies for collecting. I'm sorry, did someone say something? Okay. So the part I wanted to mention is the data that deals with cost collection, specifically for the NISP. There's actually, it bridges both executive orders, the one for the classified program and the one for the NISP. And there's sort of two buckets of information dealing with costs. There is the bucket that all the agencies that have NISP programs are to report for their management and administration of the NISP. So that's at least the 16 member agencies of the NISP and others, of course. And then there's the bucket that deals with the cost that industry expends to implement and monitor their responsibilities under the NISP. So we haven't looked at these things in quite some time, and so we had a meeting specifically on cost collection. I can't recall the date now. I want to say it was early May, where we invited the government members to discuss cost collection. And out of that, we are planning for another meeting. We want to start with the bucket that deals with the industry costs first. As far as and what we're planning is mid-August, I think, or the early August, to have that next meeting. The idea is first to get the government members on the same wavelength, so to speak, in terms of the particularly significant elements that comprise expending resources for implementing and monitoring the NISP by industry. And then we would bring industry in to obtain your feedback on this as well. We don't have a specific timeline for all this, but ideally I think we'd like to aim for, by the end of the calendar year, to have something set up so that for FY21, at least for a good part of FY2021, we'll have a mechanism in place for providing more appropriate, more pertinent cost data relative to industry's expenses in implementing the NISP. And so then we recognize we need to do this on the government side as well, not just for the NISP, but for other aspects of implementing and monitoring the Classified National Security Information Program. So that's something on the horizon. NISP systems, that was already mentioned, forming a working group. Our plan is to have that initial meeting in mid-August. We obviously talked a lot about trusted workforce, and we're going to have Heather Green come up next here after me to give more detailed information on that. Of course, Valerie Kerbin provided discussion points on that. I would think one important point just to emphasize, first, it's been a tremendous, so 2 points, it's been a tremendous, I think, success that has emanated from this undertaking of trusted workforce. We're doing this now in phases, as most of you probably know. Instead of going right to 2.0, because there's challenges to get there quickly, it's been segmented into 1.25, as I understand it, and 1.50. The key point I just want to drill home here is deferred PRs and transfer of trust. If an agency is enrolled in 1.25, they have at least minimal core evaluation through databases, maybe not all the way to the 2.0 level, then that means that individuals that are enrolled in that evaluation who've already been vetted and cleared, their PRs are deferred. And therefore, all things considered, not being anything significant in terms of something that would indicate a concern with that individual, there should be seamless transfer of trust. That's an important point. The industry members had made a recommendation when we met during the PAC PMO that Valerie Kerbin referred to, that a communication plan be put forth from a high level by the PAC PMO, perhaps, that addresses this issue about transfer of trust, what we used to call reciprocity, and also about training as we move forward with Trusted Workforce 2.0. I think that's a good recommendation. Could help. I think it would help with minimizing issues with transfer of trust among various components and agencies as you drill down from the department level. Let's see here. NISPOM rule update, I think we've already heard a little bit from DOD on that. We heard about the FAR update on the use of NCCS. We heard about ISLs on C3. I'm just running through some of the things we discussed at the working group. Valerie touched on the SEEDs, SEED 8, SEED 2, the CVCE process. Heather Green will expand a little bit on that and CE alerts and how they're processed and when actionable and valid and things of that nature. Let's see, insider threat, we've talked about that. We do expect to reengage in the next 30 to 45 days with a working group meeting there. CUI, you heard from that. NIDS, we did touch on that already in this meeting and at the working group meeting. So I believe with that, those were the main points that we had discussions on, of course, reviewing the data for access eligibility determinations, which Heather will further discuss, Heather Green. So with that, are there any questions that anyone has for me on the clearance working group? Okay, I guess not.
Okay, thank you, Greg, for that. All right, now we'll hear from Heather Green, who's been given quite a warm-up here. Heather, speaking about personnel vetting metrics. Heather, please.
Yes, absolutely. Good morning. Thank you. DCSA has a good news story in regards to our progress made with our interim determinations, our investigations, and our adjudications inventory and timeliness. So there are two slides on the website for your reference that I'll be referring to during my presentation here. So looking at the inventory metrics, during quarter three, investigations inventory reached a stable state of under 200,000. This occurred in the mid-April timeframe and was 2 years after the inventory peaked at 725,000 in 2018. So a lot of progress and a lot of hard work there. The inventory remained under 200,000 for the entire quarter. However, as of July 6th, it does stand at approximately 205,000, of which 34,900 are industry cases. The inventory has slightly increased over the past few weeks, mostly due to the COVID-related impacts. We have seen a steady state of submissions for industry, but we do have an increase of cases on hold due to the inability to collect some of the records for the investigations to close. So we do ask for your help in industry by responding to the employment verification requests and any inquiries you get from the investigators. The adjudication inventory has also continued to decrease and is working off of a steady state inventory. Currently, there's approximately 17,200 industry cases that are pending adjudication. So, again, a lot of progress with that inventory reduction in all areas. Looking at the timeliness metrics, the significant decrease in inventory has greatly aided the reduction in timelines. As shown in the chart, the investigation and adjudication inventory, timelines, has consistently decreased over the past year. The data shown reflects that the cases adjudicated during quarter three. However, based on the investigations DCSA completed and provided to the adjudication facility in Q3, the fastest 90% of the T5 investigations were actually completed in 79 days, meeting the 80-day goal for the first time since 2014. So, again, a lot of good progress. With respect to the T3s, the fastest 90% were completed in 55 days during quarter three, which is 15 days over the 40-day goal. However, under today's standards for secret cases, three need to collect character and conduct, which wasn't in place when the 40-day goal was established. But again, progress in both the T5 and T3 timeliness reduction. All very good news. We certainly are heading in the right direction. Our goal was to thoroughly vet individuals in a timely manner and to provide that direct support to mission readiness. So the next slide provides some additional metrics from the VROC portfolio. We have processed over 130,000 investigation requests. That's an industry investigation request this fiscal year. We are currently processing interim determinations within approximately 5 days of receipt. We have a growing population enrolled in the DOD CE program, as we are up to over 2.2 million enrolled in the DOD CE program. Of which approximately 455,000 are industry subjects. As of July 7th, as Mr. Pannoni referred to, we have deferred 87,803 industry PRs into the DOD CE program, and those industry PRs are enrolled in the fully compliant CE data sources to support that reciprocity. We currently see an average of about a 6% alert rate, with the majority of those alerts coming from our criminal and financial data sources. And as Mr. Pannoni mentioned, one of the one items that's done when we receive an alert obviously checking, doing the identity resolution, looking to see if it's previously known. Those that are previously known, that's a success. Those that are not previously known, we begin to action for the appropriate follow-up mitigation efforts. There are CE industry FAQs available on the DCSA website, and we do update those regularly. And it also includes the clearances do not expire memo. So I highly recommend, if you have any questions, please do refer to the DCSA website, as we are continuing to provide updates on those FAQs. Additionally, regarding reciprocity processing, just want to make a note that the CAF and DRAC are collaborating regularly to streamline the process. We've been working very hard over the last eight months or so. We have specialized teams working all reciprocity requests. Timelines to grant reciprocity requests have decreased. We have seen them decrease in our system. Although COVID-19 has presented some challenges due to the need to access the classified systems, reciprocity requests are still being completed with the dedicated resources, accessing those systems and making that a priority. That's all I have, sir. Thank you for your time and allowing me to provide DCSA personal vetting updates.
No, you're most welcome. Any questions for Heather before we move on? Okay, hearing none. Thank you again, Heather. We're now going to turn to performance metrics to Perry Russell Hunter from the Defense Office of Hearings and Appeals, also known as DOHA. All right. Perry, yours.
Thank you, and I will make this very brief. One of the advantages of us all doing this remotely is we appear to be able to do things faster, and that is also true of the review of statements of reasons and the issuance of statements of reasons. This is a real success story of collaboration between DOHA and the DOD CAF. Thanks to the CAF's leadership and hard work by folks at DOHA like Jim Norman and Julie Mendez, we have a record-breaking number of legal reviews conducted and statements of reasons issued. We're using a technology called DOD Safe, which allows us to send the SOR PII protected and with a acknowledgement. So that's working well. So there have been a number of innovations that allowed us to keep the industrial due process workflow continuing. And in fact, in the month of April, we broke a record of 475 statements of reasons legal reviewed. So the fact that the CAF and DOHA have been able to work together while doing 100% telework is really a testament to everybody's efforts and the ability to adapt and transform to unusual circumstances. The challenge has really been in resuming hearings, which we are now doing. And if you look at the DOHA website, you will see that we have a COVID-19 safety protocol message up there. It does not specify what the safety protocols are because those will change over time. But instead, and the exact safety protocols are going to be provided to the parties at the time that a notice of hearing is issued. What we are able to do is ensure that we are keeping people safe while beginning to hold hearings again, but while also keeping all of the other non-hearing work going at a as good or better pace than before. With that said, I will take any questions or just give you all back some time. Over.
Any questions for Perry? Thank you, Perry. You're a man of your word. All right, we're now going to turn to another presentation. This will be on GSA containers by Roy Giacino. Roy? Roy, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Loud and clear.
Okay, good. All right, yes. My presentation is going to be relatively short. It's not going to be that long. My name is Roy Giacino. I'm representing GSA today. I chair the IAXI SEALS committee for GSA, It's an interagency committee that oversees the GSA security equipment product line, and I was requested to give a quick brief on the ordering process of GSA-approved containers by U.S. government contracting workforce, which I understand has become somewhat of a topic of concern. So official regulation for purchasing GSA-approved containers is found in the Code of Federal Regulations 32 CFR. This regulation requires new containers meet the required GSA standards and whenever possible be available through the federal supply system. In 2014, GSA changed the procurement system for the security containers to address concerns raised by the interagency committee, specifically to better control who could purchase the containers and to increase the funding to create a more robust testing program for the GSA security equipment product line. ISU issued a procurement clarification in ISU Notice 2014-02, and this notice requires that all containers be purchased through the GSA global supply system. When we first started that process, we realized that in the early stages of the effort, that there would be some issues with U.S. government contractors purchasing through GSA Global Supply System. So we established an exemption process that would allow the U.S. government contractors to contact GSA, and GSA would review their request, determine if the represented a legitimate need for the containers to protect classified information, and approve the exemption that would allow the requester to purchase directly from a GSA-approved manufacturer. The exemption process was a temporary solution to basically fill a gap while contracting officers and U.S. government contractors made the necessary arrangements to order through the GSA Global Supply System. So the exemption process went on for about 5 years, and we actually discontinued the exemption process in September of last year. Through the exemption process, we found that a number of purchases were being purchased through third-party businesses. Sometimes a number of third-party businesses, which basically added to the supply chain custody issues and a potential risk for accountability of containers and the locking systems on those containers, and also added significant cost to the end users. So the primary reason for us to was to increase the security of the supply chain. The interagency asked that we include limited use requirements, which basically limits the procurement of security GSA-approved security containers and locking systems to U.S. government and U.S. government contractors only who need the equipment. The interagency committee established this process. And it wasn't made in a vacuum. We understood that there was significant problems with the control of our security equipment, and this was one of our big efforts to reel that in. The second reason we did this was also to GSA was losing funding with these the exemption process. So every time you purchase the GSA, they get a small percentage of that sale, and that percentage is used to actually fund the testing and approval process of the equipment and the quality assurance to ensure that manufacturers are staying up to the federal specifications of that equipment. That is solely funded through the sales, and that is it. So GSA was actually losing millions of dollars a year with the third-party sales outside the global supply system. Now, my presentation went through step-by-step ordering procedures, but that's really not going to work today. So what I want to do is I want to make sure that everybody has the website information because there is an 8-page document on GSA that actually goes through step-by-step process and all the different ordering procedures, establishing AACs, establishing DOD AACs, how to pay GSA through pay.gov with the vendor and customer self-service portal. So if everybody's ready, I'm going to please write this down. This is the GSA website where you can find the ordering information. It is www.gsa.gov/all one word, security containers. So I'll repeat that again, www.gsa.gov/all one word, security containers. And in the left sidebar, you'll see ordering procedures. And then when you click on ordering procedures, there'll be several PDFs. The one PDF that you want is the non-government ordering process. And you'll pull that document up. It's an 8-page document that goes through all the various ordering processes through GSA. There's also a 1-800 number for a GSA help desk if you need help ordering the containers or locking systems through GSA. And that number is 1-800-488-3111. Again, that's 1-800-488-3111. And that's really all I have. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Roy. Does anybody have any questions for Roy? All right, hearing none. I want to note just for the record, the statistics for the Department of Energy and the NRC Nuclear Regulatory Commission background investigations are located at the NISPAC Reports on Committee Activities page. All right. All right, we're now at the point of the meeting where we ask for NISPAC members to present new business. All right, is there any new business to present? All right, I take that is a no. Greg, am I missing anything there?
Sorry, Mark, I don't mute the phone. No, we have the open forum where,
right.
I believe you want to ask the other CSAs.
Yep.
Okay.
I do. I'll do that now. All right, we're going to so if we have no new business, we're going to move into the general open forum and discussion time. And as a suggestion, I thought I would like to for the CSAs to tell us about their COVID-19 operating status and how they've managed in this program during the pandemic. We've already heard from DOD and ODNI, so does DHS have anything that they'd like to tell us about their operating during this very unusual time?
No, sir. We don't have anything to report on this time. We've been teaming and following with DCSA's input and ODNI's input on things such as getting fingerprints and getting package submissions. So we don't have anything else significant to report.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. How about the NRC?
Yeah, Dennis Brady, NRC. So we've been utilizing all the authorities that's been granted to federal agencies to develop processes to continue operating, and without those, we would not have been able to continue the program. So thankfully for that,
nice.
We're up and running, and no new news on the program at this point.
Okay, good. Right, how about the Department of Energy?
Good morning. This is Tracy Kendall. I'll provide a couple points. Thank you for the opportunity to provide an update on the Department of Energy has and is doing as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Early on, the Secretariat authorized maximum telework flexibility for employees to accommodate state and local responses to the COVID-19 outbreak. DOE established a COVID-19 response response team hotline for reporting potential or confirmed COVID-19 cases across the complex. And the secretary also issued guidance temporarily suspending some security and safeguard requirements across the department to help minimize exposure to COVID-19 for federal employees and in our industry partners. From a PERSEC perspective, we adjusted some of our reporting timelines. We also adjusted some of our due process action timelines, just to name a couple. The Department of Energy is taking advantage of some of the exceptions offered by the Office of Personnel Management and the Defense Counterintelligence and Security Agency regarding background investigations to help ensure our industry partners' clearances are not delayed because of COVID-19. And finally, the Department of Energy continues to stand ready now and any time in the future to assist our industry partners however we can in support of the nation. Thank you again for the opportunity to present the Department of Energy's update on COVID-19.
No, thank you for doing it in such a cogent way. Right. Do any other committee members have any questions or remarks before we close out this meeting this morning? All right. Hearing none. We normally provide the date for the next meeting, but due to the uncertainties caused by the pandemic, there's simply too many unknowns at this time. We're trying to shoot for some time, most likely in mid-November, but again, that's all subject to what's coming down the pike. All NISPAC meeting announcements are posted in the Federal Registry approximately 30 days before the meetings take place. So anyway, there'll be ample warning before the next one. Mike, thank you all for your time and patience while we operate in this new environment. I will have my staff provide the NISPAC members with a date for the next meeting. Again, this is what I just said. So with that and without any further comment, thank you again for your patience and your bearance as we, this is our first virtual one, and I'm pleased with the way that Lynn and us all due to you all and your very good presentation keeping this meeting moving. So thank you.
Hey,
right,
Mark,
with that, I'm going.
Mark,
yeah, Greg.
Could I just remind, because we didn't, this time afford the opportunity for the non-member participants, just want to remind them, if you do have questions, as Mr. Bradley said at the beginning of the meeting, take advantage of that NISP at NARA mailbox and send us your questions. We will respond.
Indeed, we will. All right. Thanks for that, Greg. Okay, without further ado, this meeting is now adjourned. All right. Stay safe.
Thank you.
That concludes our conference. Thank you for using Event Services. You may now disconnect.